Hello, you attractive people, and welcome to the Total Easter Podcast. That's right, it's the podcast where I talk about everything to do with Easter. It's not true, is it? It's not true. Even on Easter Day, when this episode comes out, I'm talking about Christmas. Run the theme music!
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me, my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the Shot Range Model Air Rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to episode, I don't know, of the Total Christmas Podcast. That's right, it's Easter, and I'm talking about Christmas, and you're listening. So don't blame me, baby. Blame yourself. I've got to do the interactive bit. You ready for the interactive bit? Here it comes. Happy Easter. Thank you. Well, no, I didn't get any, actually, but the girls got loads, so I'm hoping they didn't count how many they got, and just once they've gone to bed, I'll just eat all theirs. So, yeah. Really? Serious? I did not know that. Wow. Well, thanks for sharing. And scene. There we go. That was a good one, in my opinion. In your opinion, it was naff. Now, I've got a packed show for you. Before I get into it, I've got one thing I want to talk about. Two things, actually. First thing, do you remember last episode? I'd had about four people contact me. And I was like, did I say something in the episode to make people like contact me and feel sorry for me and think, oh, I better email the bloke? Well, they did. This last episode, nothing. Apart from one. Well, of course, from Bob Baker. But Bob Baker always sends in his segments. But other than that, I got one, and that was from Jeff Malcolmson, who is a friend of the show anyway, because I had him on the show. It was a long time ago. It was a year and a half ago, roughly, when Jeff was on it. And if you remember, Jeff is the creator of Santa and Rudy. He draws a comic strip with Santa Claus and Rudy. Guess which one of the reindeer Rudy is? That's right, Dasher. No, it's Rudolph, so there you go. And he just contacted me to let me know that he's completed the animation of Santa and Rudy. He's done like a very short sketch animation of it, and I will put the link on the show notes, and I'll also put it up on Facebook. So please check it out, like it, love it, do something with it, share it with all your friends. Yeah, it's done a fantastic job, and the guy that does the voiceover, I haven't seen his face, but he sounds incredibly handsome. I'll just say that. So that's pretty much it for the housekeeping. So let's start the show. Yeah, shall we? We shall. And commence. So boys and girls, the last episode, actually wasn't the last episode. See, I'm already lying to you. Goodness me, our relationship is breaking down. Not last episode, the last episode before, and the last episode before that, I talked about Sinterklaas, which is St. Nicholas Day, which is the 6th or the 5th, I forget, of December, in the Netherlands, where they celebrate St. Nicholas's Day. And it's sort of like their they do celebrate Christmas on Christmas Day, but St. Nicholas Day is almost as big as, or possibly bigger, I don't know, I don't live in the Netherlands, do I? But it's a massive festival, and it's all about St. Nicholas. And one of the things I talked about was obviously Sinterklaas himself. Then I talked about his mate, who we're not going to discuss. And this episode, I want to talk about one of the really interesting traditions that goes along with the Sinterklaas festival. Just want to say, this is because Travis, one of our listeners, our dear listeners, he mentioned this in his email. So sit back, put your feet up, have a big old glass of rum, and on the other hand, you want something like a whiskey. It's probably not a good idea to mix them, but we're not interested in good ideas today. We're interested in drinking alcohol. So, get your alcoholic beverages, put your feet up on the table, get your feet off the table. What is this, a hotel? Get your feet off the table. Disgusting. Right, where was I? Oh, yeah. So, yeah, this time I want to talk about chocolate letters. Yeah. Now, the tradition of chocolate letters apparently goes all the way back to Germanic times. And it used to be the custom, when a child was born, people would give the child a bread letter, the letter of their name, made out of bread. So back then it would have been runic letters, but obviously now it's not. What do we call modern letters? Modern letters? Yeah, let's call them that. So yeah, that was when it originally started. And then later on, bread letters would be used to help teach kids. So what you'd do is you'd give the kid a letter to learn, and they learn the letter. And then when they've learnt the letter and they know what it looks like, then they've got to learn to write the letter. And when they've written the letter, then they eat the letter. And then they learn the letter, and they write the letter, and they eat the letter, and they learn the letter. And you get the picture. I don't need to carry on. Or should I? Do you want me to do that 26 times? I'm not doing it. Right. Yeah. And it was around this time where they were called letter banquets. And this would be a bread letter, but it would actually be stuffed with like an almond filling. So yeah, that makes him a bit more exciting, doesn't it? Nice. Anyway, come the 19th century, when St. Nicholas would drop off the presents, they put a blanket over the presents, so you knew it was your presents. They put a bread letter on it, you see, and that's where it started. That's how it became a thing as part of the Sinterklaas festival, to show that these were your presents because it had your letter on it. And then as time passed on, they'd make these letters out of other things, so they started making them out of sausage. Yeah, sausage letters, obviously, like we talked about, the almond paste filled ones. And then come around 1900, they started making chocolate letters. To begin with, this started off like just a bit of a novelty, but then by the 1950s it was all chocolate letters. So that's how long it took to transition from the bread ones, boring, to the chocolate ones, fantastic. So yeah, it's come the 1950s, everyone was getting chocolate letters from Sinterklaas. So the font they use is Egyptienne. I hope I'm saying that right, Egyptienne. Because it has large serifs. You know what serifs are? They're the little bits that sort of stick out. Google it. Yeah, so it has large serifs. But here's the other thing, okay? There's no small bits for the letters to snap. You see, they're quite solid letters all the way around. Yeah, it's going to be a nice sturdy letter, because that's what you want, a nice sturdy letter. And the moulds have like a ridged surface on the inside, so that helps you get the letters out easier. But also, the ridges sort of help hide any blemishes, and it gives them a ribbed texture for her pleasure. Yeah, they're ribbed for her pleasure. Yeah, so you get these chocolate letters, like with ribs on the top, and yeah, that's pretty much what a chocolate letter is. Every year, the chocolate manufacturers, they pay close attention to what the popular names are. And in previous years, or most years it seems, that the most popular letter is, do you want to have a guess? You thinking? Think of your letter? Have you thought of your letter? You ready? Here it comes. You ready? This is the most popular letter. It is M. I wouldn't have said that. I wouldn't have thought that at all. But here's the thing. It also can be used for like mother, mama, or mother. I probably said that wrong, but murder is the way you say mother. Well, not the way they say it, but that's how it's written in the Netherlands. They say it properly. I said it like an imbecile. Yeah, so the most popular letter is M. Do you want to guess the second one? You guessing? Have a think. Do you want to guess or not? You do want to. Okay, have a guess then. Got it? Okay, it's letter S. And it's not just because there's a lot of names that begin with the letter S, it's also because S is for Sinterklaas. So, like in the workplace, your boss might give everyone a chocolate letter, and rather than getting everyone's individual names, because the boss is a lazy git and everyone else does all the hard work, he just goes and buys a shed loads of S's, chucks them on the desk and says, thanks for a year's hard work. That's the kind of boss he is. And to be honest, he should be ashamed of himself. Or not. I mean, at least they get a big chocolate S, don't they? So, you know, rough with the smooth, I guess. Yeah, so many companies, many chocolate companies, don't bother making Q, U, X, Y, and Z. They don't bother with them. So if your name's Zachary, or Zach, which is quite a popular name in the UK, you ain't getting a letter. You can have an S, but you've got to sort of turn it upside down. And it's not like zigzaggy, it's curvy. And you're like, well, is that the best I get? And they'll be like, yeah, Zach. Or should I say, sack? Ha! Which isn't a very nice way to behave at Christmas. Luckily, it's not Christmas. It's Sinterklaas, which is St. Nicholas's Day. So it's a good 2 or 3 weeks before Christmas. So behave how you want, is what I'm saying. Now, here's the thing, right? You're sitting at home going, hang on a minute. My name's Ian. And you're only thinking that if your name is Ian. But you're thinking, my name's Ian. And I get like a tiny sliver of chocolate for my letter I. My brother Michael has got a great big M. And my other brother, Winslow, which is an interesting name, but it's a name nonetheless, he's got a W. Why, how is that fair? Well, don't worry, Ian. Do not panic, because all the letters weigh the same. That's right, all the big companies that do it, all the more prominent ones, they make sure that every single letter weighs the same. It's good, isn't it? So the letter I, you're talking about a big old chunky letter I, and then you've got your M, which is a nice big shape, but sorry, mate, it's the same weight as the I. So, yeah, so don't panic, Ian. Relax, mate, calm down. It's going to be fine. Ian, it's going to be okay, mate. And to be honest, what's handy, right, is Ian, if he's getting on your nerves, just get him a Mars bar. It's like, that's the letter I. It's like, yeah, but it's not the same, is it? It's not ribbed for her pleasure, is it? And I'll be like, Ian, I'm sick of this, right? You get the nougat and the caramel. Everyone else just gets solid chocolate. This conversation is never going to take place. Can we just forget this part of it? Can we just go back? Imagine I stopped talking about, well, I don't know, what, a minute ago? Cool. So another thing I learnt was, to combat Christmas creep, or Sinterklaas creep, as it's commonly known, one of the biggest supermarket chains, Albert Heijn, I think it's H-E-I-J-N, so we're going to say Heijn, because I'm not very good at speaking Netherlands, or Dutch, is the correct word to say it. They promised to not stock chocolate letters until 14 days before the arrival of Sinterklaas. Now, if you were listening to the previous episode where I talked about Sinterklaas, you'll know that his arrival is sort of mid-November-ish. So they still get plenty of time to buy him because he's there from sort of mid-November when he arrives. You've got 2 weeks before that, so it's like early November. And then he goes home on the 5th. He goes home the day after, I think, Sinterklaas, which is, I think, so he goes home on the 6th because Sinterklaas is the 5th of December. Yeah, that's what happens. So yeah, you get about 5 weeks where you can buy your chocolate letters. And then after that, are you ready? All the unsold letters, they don't like reduce them. You know, like when you go out, or like the day after Easter, and the Easter eggs are really cheap if there's any left over. Yeah, they don't do that, right? They just take them all back to the factory. That's what happens, apparently, and they get melted down and, I don't know, made into what? Maybe Easter eggs or something else, but they don't get reduced, apparently. Yeah, that's what I read, and I read that in a couple of places. So, yeah, I think that's pretty cool, actually. I like that. Yeah, so each year, they sell millions. Now, the most popular company, apparently, is Drost, and they make 20 million chocolate letters each year. And in second place, you've got De Heers, and they make about 10 million. So that's 30 million there. Plus, you've got loads of other little companies that do it as well. So yeah, you're looking at tens of millions every year. Most countries, this isn't something you'll see at all, although you can buy chocolate letters. I had a look into it. You can get them on Etsy and places like that. And they do get shipped overseas as well, but mostly it is like properly just kept to the Netherlands. So there we go, we've covered that. That is chocolate letters at the Sinterklaas Festival in the Netherlands. Now let's move on and do this.
I did something I shouldn't have, and these people called me on it.
You didn't.
That's pretty low, mister. If I had a rubber hose, I would beat you.
Okay, boys and girls, this story is just heartbreaking. And I've also got to play this, I think.
Nope.
This is a story, I can't get the person who I happened to tell you it, because she's only a young girl, she's 11 years old, and she's the daughter of my wife's friend. Her name is Rosie, and she is, I meet lots of children, having two young girls, I meet lots and lots of kids, but Rosie particularly is one of the nicest young children I've ever met. She is a pure delight to be around, an absolute gem she is. And this is a story of something that happened to her at school. Now, the teacher had set like a homework assignment. You had to write something about who was your idol or someone that you really respected. That was over the weekend. On the Monday, all the children came in, they'd finished their homework, and they're all sitting in the classroom, and like the first kid would stand up and they talk about maybe their mum or their dad who was inspiring to them. But most of the kids were talking about like pop stars, or they might talk about sports stars that they were big fans of, and that. And then it came to Rosie's turn. And Rosie stood up and she said that the person that she respected the most in the whole wide world was Father Christmas. And the whole class started laughing. Even the teacher was laughing at her. Yeah. I've grilled my wife about this, and she didn't know quite what the outcome was, but apparently, when Rosie came home, she couldn't understand why everyone was laughing when she chose Father Christmas. Now, here's the thing. You got all these other kids laughing at her. Well, she should have turned around and said, "Oh, all right, well, Tommy, how come you chose David Beckham? Because David Beckham doesn't travel around the whole world in one night and give everyone presents for nothing in return, does he? And Sally, you said Harry Styles. Well, I'll tell you this, Harry Styles doesn't spend all his money buying presents for all the children of the world, does he? No, he doesn't. So that's why Father Christmas is the nicest person in the whole wide world." There you go. And that's such a lovely story, but at the same time, kind of heartbreaking. But I don't know if at the end of it, she sort of realised that there was no Santa. You'd sort of think all the kids in the playground would be, "Rosie, you don't believe in Santa, do you?" But from what I can gather, it's like she couldn't understand why they were laughing, and that was it. So maybe she does still believe. Anyway, good for you, Rosie. And good for Santa as well. I don't think we do give him enough credit. Do you know what I mean? How many thank you letters does he get? It's every year you just expect to get presents from this bloke who gets nothing in return, and yet he makes presents and delivers presents to everyone in the world. Well, not everyone, you know, the kids, the good kids and the bad kids. Let's face it, most of the bad kids get presents as well. Yeah, good for you, Santa Claus. And good for you, Rosie. Now let's move on to this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
Boys and girls, it's time for Bob Baker's first segment of the show. It's a good one, this one as well. I find this one really interesting. Here it comes.
You know, I am not sure that alcohol is the answer, but it's worth a shot. So if there is one thing that we know about the classic Christmas carol, The 12 Days of Christmas, is that it has a lot of birds. From the partridge to the turtle doves, French hens, swans, geese, and more, this song references a wide range of feathered friends. And Americans, we know our wildfowl. But the real question is, why are they so prominent in a carol about true love, Christmas, and gifts? Could it be that perhaps the birds represent something else? In British slang, a woman can be referred to as a bird. So maybe the birds in the song are supposed to be exotic, lovely ladies. The origins of the use of bird for a woman are unclear, but several theories do exist. Some say it comes from Britain's poultry farming history, where the female hen is called a bird. Or it could be from the phrase of women being the fair sex, because the fair refers to the lighter colored feathers of birds. Some also say that if you consider how birds flock together, it is similar to the way that girls also gather in groups. Although, no matter how you try to justify the term today, you're going to sound incredibly sexist. And guess what? After further review, The 12 Days of Christmas was first published in England in 1780, and it was probably chanted as a lyrical poem even much earlier. And the first use of the term bird to refer to a female in the UK wasn't until the mid-19th century, so the timing just doesn't align. I am wrong. I realize now that the birds of our carol are not meant to represent women, but instead are theorized to be luxury items. Gifts meant to show wealth and abundance. I know, this may seem obvious, but I am kind of a bird brain. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Thank you for that one, Bob. I really found that interesting. Do you know what? It's funny, because quite often I'll just sit at the computer and look up words and think, I wonder why we say that. I wonder why we say that. I've never considered looking up the word birds, but it's one I use it a lot, you know, especially when I was younger. I don't know if I still use it as much as I used to. Birds. Birds. I don't know. But anyway, great one. Thanks for that, Bob. It'll be back later in the show, but right now it's time for this. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Boys and girls, it's the quiz. Don't get all upset. Don't be like that. there's a few tricky questions in this one. Let me just explain to you something. I've got this book, the biggest Christmas quiz book ever, apparently. I haven't checked it with Guinness Book of Records, but it's got 1,063 questions. I'm going to read out some of the questions that I... Because what I do is I go through and I circle the ones that I think, yeah, people might get that. Right. I'm going to read out some questions now and see if you would have got any of these. Right, ready? Which two comedy double acts appeared together on the front cover photo of the 1973 Christmas double issue of the Radio Times? That's like the BBC's version of the TV Guide. What? Who do you reckon those two comedy double acts were? Do you know what? I think I might know. Let me just double check the answer. Before I do check, I'm going to say Morecambe and Wise and the Two Ronnies. Okay, let's see what it was. It was Morecambe and Wise and the Two Ronnies. See, that's because I'm British, though. So if you're anywhere else in the world, I can't imagine you would have had the slightest clue. Have a listen to this one. In the 2012 Christmas episode of which Channel 4 sitcom does the Goodman family's strange next-door neighbour Jim Bell turn up three times, the final time dressed as Father Christmas, after which horrible grandma's dog dies? Right, any ideas what sitcom that is? Yeah, I know that one as well. It's Friday Night Dinner. But I'm guessing you wouldn't have known it. Do you know, there's some in there that I definitely wouldn't have known, though. Like, how about this one? In the 2006 Christmas Day episode of which TV sitcom, called The Handsome Stranger, is there a church wedding sequence featuring the Yvonne Fair song It Should Have Been Me? Okay, do you want to know what that was? Oh, it's The Vicar of Dibley. Do you know what? I reckon some of you might have got that. I wouldn't have. Anyway, my point is, a lot of the questions in this book are ones that people in other countries outside the UK wouldn't have a chance of getting. So before you start moaning about how difficult the quiz is, then have a think about how many questions I could be asking you. Okay? I'm being selective. I'm trying to help you. Right, let's get into this. I don't want to argue. Question number one. Which Dutch violinist and orchestra leader, who is known as the King of Waltz, recorded the albums Merry Christmas in 1992, Christmas Around the World in 2006, and Home for Christmas in 2012? I can tell you now, I would not have got that one. Question number two. Which carol's second verse is, "The stars in the bright sky look down where he lay, the little Lord Jesus asleep on the hay"? Okay? Bit easier, wouldn't it? Question number something. Queen Elizabeth II gave... This is true or false, right? Is this true? Is this false? Queen Elizabeth II gave a broadcast Christmas message every year since 1952. Is that true? Is that false? The answer is, of course it's false, because she didn't give one last year. You know why she didn't give one last year? I think we all know why she didn't give one this last year just gone. However, we're going to say from 1952 up to 2020. Is that true or is that false? Question number something. What is the name of the church season that begins on the fourth Sunday before Christmas? What is the name of that church season? Tell me. Or write it down. Or just think it in your head. Question whatever. What brand name stuffing was created by Eccles Butcher... Eccles is a place. Eccles Butcher John Crampton in 1901. Alright, it's a brand of stuffing you'd use to shove up the backside of your turkey. That was created in... You heard the question. What more do you want from me? Question whatever. In what European language is... Here we go. Noleg Shona Dwit, the Christmas greeting? Now, I'm going to spell it out for... I'm not going to spell it out for you. I can't be bothered. But I sort of... I pronounced it as it's written. Okay. Noleg Shona Dwit. Where is that, the Christmas greeting? Where? Question something. Babo Natale, I think it's Natalie, but spelled Natale, N-A-T-A-L-E. Babo Natale is the name for Santa Claus in which country? Where do they call him that? Question something. The song Pretty Paper, containing the barest of Christmas references in the lyrics. Tell you what though, that song, Pretty Paper, that gets on quite a few compilation albums, Christmas compilation albums, it does. It was written by Willie Nelson and recorded by which other US singer, and he took it to number 4 in the UK charts in 1964. Now, I thought it made it to number 1. I was wrong, clearly, because it got to number 4. Who sung that song? Pretty Paper. That's all I know, Pretty Paper. Okay, question number... Oh, we're at number 9 now. In which 1991 film does Alan Rickman say, don't think it's Die Hard because it isn't, cancel the kitchen scraps for lepers and orphans, no more merciful beheadings, and call off Christmas? What film is that? Give you a clue, it's not a Christmas film, but it mentions Christmas once, just then. And the last question, which children's literary character in his school's great hall, there's a clue, had, here we go, this is the quote, had never in all his life had such a Christmas dinner. 100 fat roast turkeys, mountains of roast and boiled potatoes, platters of chipolatas, tureens of buttered peas, silver boats of thick, rich gravy and cranberry sauce. What book is that out of, pretty much? Okay, so there you go. That is your 10 questions. How did you do? Pretty badly. I'll tell you what I scored now. Okay, I scored... Hang on. Scored 6. Not good, is it? Really? Yeah, scored 6. Okay, we'll see if you beat me. So the first one, question number 1, right? Who was that Dutch violinist who had all those Christmas albums known as the King of Waltz? That was André Rieu. I think I said that wrong, but you know the guy, André Rieu. R-I-E-U. André Rieu. Question number 2. Which carol's easy one, wasn't it? Which carol's second verse is "The stars in the bright sky look down where he lay, the little Lord Jesus asleep on the hay." That was, of course, "Away in a Manger." Did Queen Elizabeth give a broadcast Christmas message every year since 1952 to 2021? Did she? No, she missed out one in 1969. And do you know why? I'll tell you why. Because that was the year that Prince Charles was invested as the Prince of Wales. And they made like a documentary about him and the whole thing. That was released in the summer. That was shown in the summer. And the Queen thought that if she did a Christmas speech as well, that would be overkill. That would be like too much royalty in one year. So she didn't. She just gave a written speech, which I believe was printed in newspapers. Can you believe that? She's like, oh, goodness me, they've had enough of us. 6 months ago, we were on TV. Now look at them. They can't get out of the papers, can they? Especially thanks to old blooming Harry. Eh? Yeah. Thanks, Harry. Right. Question... Well, I don't know. What is the name of the church season that begins on the fourth Sunday before Christmas? Well, of course, it is Advent calendar season. Well, it's just Advent, but, you know. Question number 5. What this is, do you know what? I didn't have a clue about this one, but I thought, this is going to be interesting. I'm keen to find out. And then it's when I read the answer, I was like, oh, of course it blooming is. What brand name stuffing was created by the butcher John Crampton, who lived in Eccles, in 1901? The brand name was Paxo. And Paxo, it's like, you know, people use that a bit interchangeably when they're talking about stuffing sometimes in the UK. And like, it might be like a nickname for a turkey or a chicken. They might call it Paxo because it's a bit funny, you see. So yeah, Paxo, that's the most popular stuffing in the UK. Next question. In what European language is Noleg Shona Duit, the Christmas greeting? That is Gaelic Irish or Irish Gaelic. Yeah, never would have got that. Babbo Natali is the name for Santa Claus in which country? Ready? Italy. I got that, I guess. I didn't know that, but I do now. See, that will stick in my tiny brain. The song Pretty Paper, which does slightly reference Christmas. It is a Christmas song. In the UK, it does get airplay still. It was written by Willie Nelson, recorded by which other US singer? Whom? Well, the answer was Roy Orbison. And I knew that. And to be honest, I didn't know it was written by Willie Nelson. So we're all learning things today. Number 9. In which 1991 film does Alan Rickman say, "Cancel the kitchen scraps for lepers and orphans, no more merciful beheadings, and call off Christmas"? That was Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. And the final question. Which children's literary character in his school's great hall had a massive Christmas roast dinner? Well, that was, of course, Harry Potter. There we go. That was your 10 questions. I wonder how you did, but I hope you did very well. And if you didn't do very well, I hope that it's not going to affect you in a deep way and you will get over this crisis and maybe we'll be stronger for the experience. Okay, let's move on and do this. As you know, and as I keep reminding you, my wife bought me a toilet roll with Christmas jokes printed on it for Christmas. Each episode, I read out one of those jokes, and you sit there and go, that's not really a joke, is it? I don't get it. What was that meant to be? Well, this one is no exception, and it's terrible. It really is terrible. Are you ready? What do you get if you cross an archer with someone wrapping up Christmas presents? Ribbon hood. Ribbon hood. I sort of get it, but it ain't funny. No way. But don't worry, boys and girls, rest assured, I shall be wiping my ass with that joke. Thank you. Boys and girls, Bob is back and he's got another great way that you guys can keep Christmas alive all year round. Take it away, Bob.
Thank you, Jack. So today's suggestion comes from Christy Easter, which is perfect for this show because, you know, the bunny comes tomorrow. Even though we are total Christmas, we do show respect for the other holidays. So Christy Easter, this one's for you. The way that she likes to stay festive all year is to watch a Christmas movie on the 25th of the month. I love this suggestion because I do a similar thing. Although Christie's is a bit more rational, mine is somewhat excessive. She uses Rudolph Day, the 25th, to unleash her inner elf. For me, I got a new job in 2021, so I have to commute into the city for work. This means a 2-hour train ride, so I found an old DVD player and I watch Christmas movies on the train. I do this at least 3 days a week. I used to avoid the obvious holiday films, The Grinch, Santa Claus, Elf, unless it was December, just in case somebody might see what I was watching. But you know, I got over that pretty quick. Now I'll watch anything about Christmas, be it the day after, in the middle of the summer, or even on Halloween. As Christy says, it is a little Christmas treat that you can look forward to. Now she will reserve a few of her favorites that she will only watch during the actual season, but the rest are all fair game. Now for me, I've been at this for 2 years, and I still haven't run out of the films and the specials that I own. Makes me think that I may need a less expensive hobby. Now, if you have a compulsive way that you honor Christmas, get it off your chest and let Jack know. I will share it with our total Christmas community.
Well, thanks for that, Bob. And thanks for that, Christy, as well. Do you know, that is apt, isn't it? That Christy Easter, we read out her suggestion on Easter. It's funny that Bob said the day before Easter, because in the UK, my episodes come out at midnight on the Sunday. So if you're behind us on the international timeline, yeah, you'll get it on the Saturday. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, I think that's a fantastic suggestion. Because let's face it, 25th of the month, that's only like 12 times a year. One of those is in December, another one's in November, you can get away with that. So like 10 times in the year, you're only watching 10 films. It's not like people go, you watch Christmas films all year round. It's like, I watch 10 spread out throughout the year. Don't give me a hard time for loving the season. So yeah, that's a fantastic one. Because that's not something I'd personally do, is watch Christmas films throughout the year. But I think I could do that. I might start adding that to the schedule. Great one, Christy. And happy Easter. Or happy Christy Easter. That's you. Yeah, now it's time for this.
I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing.
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Boys and girls, this is the segment of the show where I pick a song that, for some reason, never became a Christmas classic. And I say for some reason, when you listen to this one, you'll understand why it wasn't a Christmas classic. Or you might not. And here's the thing, I actually like this song. But here's the other thing, it doesn't mention Christmas at any point in the song. Even though the title of the song is Naughty Christmas. And the subtitle is Goblin in the Office. Yeah, this song, like I said, it's called Naughty Christmas and it's by Fat Les. Let me play a little bit for you.
You naughty, naughty woman, woman, woman. I a naughty man, naughty, naughty man. You naughty, naughty woman, woman, woman.
Now, I want to start off by telling you a little bit of a history about Fat Les. The Fat Les was started by Keith Allen and Alex James. Alex James was the bass player from the band Blur. I don't know if you've heard of Blur. I don't know how popular they are overseas, but in the UK, they were a massive band in the 90s and early 2000s. They're still kicking about, actually. Keith Allen, in the UK, he's highly recognisable. Overseas, maybe not so much. He's been in a few films. He was in The Kingsman, The Golden Circle. That's pretty much it for big movies that would have travelled overseas, I think. He's had a few bit parts in other films. He played the Sheriff of Nottingham in a TV series of Robin Hood that was in the UK in the early 2000s. Yeah, but he's been in loads of other stuff. Everyone knows him. He's also the father of the singer Lily Allen, who you might know or you might not. Now, Keith Allen was chatting to Alex James in the Groucho Club, apparently, in London, and they were talking about the upcoming 1998 World Cup, and they came up with the idea of doing their own unofficial English football anthem. Now, the England team, every World Cup, has an official anthem. I think they may have stopped doing it now, because I don't remember anything from the last sort of two or three World Cups. But back in the 90s, football songs were huge. In 1996, we had the European Cup in Great Britain, and the song that we had that year was Three Lions, and it was massive all summer long, that song was. Spent weeks at number one. It's coming, three lions on a shirt. It's coming, shoes were made, still gleaming. It's coming, 30 years of hurt. It's coming, never stopping dreaming. It's coming. So like I say, at the time, football songs were huge, and Keith Allen was chatting to Alex James. Now, Keith Allen already had form, because he'd been part of the official England football song in 1990, which was recorded by New Order. He'd helped write it, and he's in the video. Love's got the world in motion. And that one got to number one and was a huge hit. So, yeah, he's chatting to Alex James. And then they also got chatting to the artist, Damien Hirst. And they decided to form a band. And they called themselves Fat Les, which was named after a lady that they knew whose name was Les. So that's nice. And they came with this song called Vindaloo. And Vindaloo, during the World Cup in 1998, was a massive song. It was really popular. Didn't quite make it to number one, because that year's official England anthem, well, that didn't beat it. That was a bit naff, actually. It's a little bit. That only got to number nine, that one did. And that featured Echo and the Bunnymen, the Spice Girls, the lead singer from the band Space, and Ocean Colour Scene, who were all pretty big at the time, yet no one was that interested in that song. However, the song that actually was at number one, when Vindaloo was at number two, was the re-release of Three Lions. They did another version 2 years later where they changed a few of the lyrics. It was called Three Lions 98, and that was number one. So it got to number one again, that song did. So Vindaloo was this massive hit. So come Christmas, they decided to release what they called the official Christmas record for 1998. And this is it. Naughty Christmas. Now, I'm not quite sure what is going on with Keith Allen's voice there. One thing I want to say, actually, about Keith Allen, he's Welsh. But if you heard him speak, he hasn't got a particularly heavy Welsh accent. But here's the question. If he's Welsh, what's he doing writing and performing songs for the English football team? I do not know. Does he support England? I guess he must. But why doesn't he support Wales? I mean, generally, England are a lot more successful in these championships than Wales. But still, that's no excuse, is it? I mean, otherwise, we'd all be out supporting Brazil, wouldn't we? Anyway, this Christmas record, again, written by Keith Allen and Alex James. It also had Joe Strummer of The Clash. Yeah, that's right, Joe Strummer from The Clash. He played guitars on it. A gentleman called Roland Rivron. If you're in the UK, you should know Roland Rivron. He played drums. And Allen and a young lady called Lisa Moorish, they sing on it. Now, if you've never heard of Lisa Moorish, she's a very attractive lady. She was sort of fairly famous in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s. She actually had a child with Liam Gallagher from Oasis, frontman from Oasis. And she also had a child 5 years later with the lead singer of The Libertines, Pete Doherty. Yeah, she's just two frontmen. She likes her frontmen, it seems. Anyway, she's the one doing the singing, and the video is like this big office party where everyone's sort of dancing around, well, doing what they do at an office party, you know, like dancing, being at a party, officing, getting drunk in their suits. It's got a lot of celebrities in it, actually. You've got Paul Kay. See, the thing is, I say all these things, and you're thinking, who's that then? Well, Paul Kay, he's very famous in the UK. He's been in a number of films, a number of TV series. He had a very popular character called Dennis Penis in the sort of early 90s. I don't know what happened to that character, actually. It was like a character that Paul Kay played where he'd like interview celebrities and sort of try and wind them up and take the mick out of them a bit. A kind of a little bit like what Ali G used to do, because Ali G was obviously a character when he'd interview celebrities or other people and people didn't know how to take him. Kind of Dennis Penis was sort of like a precursor to that. Anyway, that's Paul Kay. You've got Matt Lucas and David Walliams. You heard of them? They're from Little Britain, which is very popular in the UK. David Walliams, he's a massive author now. And Matt Lucas, you might know, he played both Tweedledum and Tweedledee in the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland film. He's been in loads of other stuff. He was in Bridesmaids. His sister was played by Rebel Wilson. But they were like the landlords for Kristen Wiig's character and they kicked her out. No, do you remember him? Yeah, whatever. Anyway, you've also got Zoe Ball in there and another one where you're going, who's she? Well, she's a very popular DJ. She presents the morning show on Radio 2 in the UK now. She's been a massive TV presenter. She was very big in the 90s. I say she's in the video. She's in it for like 2 seconds, maybe. They're doing a conga and she's one of the people. It almost looks like she was walking past. She's like, what's going on? It's like, we're just filming a video. Do you want to be in it? She's like, yeah, I'll have a go then. That's what it seemed like. I could be wrong. Anyway, you've got all these famous celebrities. This song, which doesn't mention Christmas, it's taken the mick out of office for Christmas parties. Yeah, it came out and it got to number 21, which isn't a massive hit really at Christmas. But the thing is, it is so catchy. Because since I've been researching this, I get it stuck in my head all day long. I'll be gardening just with this in my head. You're nutty, nutty woman, woman. It's terrible, terrible state of affairs. Very catchy song though. You're nutty, nutty woman, woman, woman. You are, I am naughty man. Yeah, so that's it. I don't think I've heard it once since it was released in 1998. And to be honest, I don't even remember hearing it then. I remember people mentioning it, saying, oh, have you heard the new Fat Liz song? It's a bit weird. Yeah, so that's it. That's the song I wanted to talk about this week, just because I thought it was interesting. Just to follow on the story of Fat Liz, they only released 5 singles in total, I believe. The next time they released one was in 2000. That was the European Cup. They released a version of Jerusalem, the sort of hymn, and they had a few choirs singing along with them. That one actually got to number 10 in the charts. Then come 2002, when it was the World Cup again, they released a single called Who Invented Fish and Chips? And it's actually really funny. It's got a great tune, a bit rude. You should check it out, actually. I'll play a tiny bit of it. Who invented fish? God. Who invented chips? God did too. Who invented fish and chips? English did. Well, who invented poo? Your mum did. You punch, you slag. Pop it in the onion bag. You punch, you slag. Do you know that was singing there? That's his daughter, Lily Allen. When she was only, what, she looks like she's about 12 then? She started marching down the street with her dad singing that. Yeah, that got to number 86. That was like the first single that Lily Allen was ever on. Yeah, it got to number 86, so that was a massive failure. And then they got back together again 10 years later when we had the London Olympics in the UK. That was in 2012, and they changed the name to Fit Les instead of Fat Les, and the song is called the official Fit Les Olympic Anthem, and it's naff. I had listened to it, didn't care for it. By this point, Alex James had had enough anyway. He wasn't interested in getting back together with the band. And it never charted. Didn't even chart. So, yeah, there you go. That was it. That was Fit Les, or Fat Les. Yeah. One last little thing I want to say is, Lily Allen, Keith Allen's daughter, that's the first time she appeared in the chart. I only learnt this the other day. Do you know she's married to? Yeah, David Harbour. You know, the guy at Stranger Things. You know, he also played Hellboy. Yeah, they've been married 2.5 years. So good for them. Yeah. And you think, oh, cool, he must be a lot older than her. Only 10 years. Only 10 years. I would have put him a bit older than that, than her. But yeah, 10 years older. And to be honest, the difference between me and my wife's 8.5 years. So, you know, can't really judge that, can I? So there you go. That's got nothing to do with Christmas. And to be honest, the song itself has got very little to do with Christmas, apart from the title and the fact that it's meant to be based around office Christmas parties. But that was Naughty Christmas. If you want to stick it on your playlist, I'm not going to stop you, but I'm not going to encourage you either.
You naughty, naughty woman, woman, woman.
Now let's do this. This episode's recommendation is getting some fresh air. Get some fresh air. Go and do that. It's really good for you. And it makes you feel healthy. Just getting it makes you feel healthy. But also, I think it's good for the soul as well. This time of year, when the flowers are coming up and the greenery is starting to show on the trees, it's the best time. Well, not the best time. It's one of the best times. It's a good time to get out. You know, the winter is over now. We can move on and get into spring. So get some fresh air. That is this episode's recommendation. Hey, and while you're getting your fresh air, you could always listen to the Total Christmas podcast. Yeah, there you go. And that is it for this episode. I want to say a huge thank you again to my mate Bob Baker for his input. He does a fantastic job. He really does. And also to Christy Easter for sending in her suggestion. That's it. Yeah, that was the show. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you didn't hate the quiz too much. Yeah, I hope you learned something. And that's it. This is it. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you because you're beautiful. Happy Merry Christmas.
Look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
That's right. That's right.
Attaboy, Clarence.